The Hardy Boys, Case Files, number 80, Dead of Night, by Franklin W. Dixon. On Halloween night, the dead walk free, and the living pay the price. Chapter 1.
Happy Halloween, Hardys.
The quiet voice came over the speakerphone.
I suppose you're wondering why I wanted to speak to you both at once. It's a treat, I promise. Not a trick.
Frank Hardy ran a hand through his thick brown hair.
So this is why you dragged me away from breakfast and into the den, he said, glancing at his younger brother, Joe.
He recognized the voice on the phone. Although its owner's real name was a mystery, the Hardys knew him as the Gray Man, an agent for a top-secret government intelligence force known as the Network. Mr. Gray, as he was sometimes known, looked like an insurance salesman while actually being an exceptional spy. Frank and Joe had worked both with and against him, which is probably why the government man was promising no tricks.
So, what's the treat?
Frank asked suspiciously. He didn't altogether trust the man.
You've just won an all-expenses-paid trip to Washington,
the Gray Man said.
We're going to trial on the Ring of Evil case, and your testimony will be crucial.
Joe Hardy nodded.
So, Boris's lawyers ran out of delaying tactics. Good. Maybe we can nail the slime.
I'm glad you're so eager to take the stand,
the Gray Man said.
We're depending on your testimony.
I'm ready,
Joe told him. Frank gave his younger brother a sidelong glance. Joe might talk a good game, but to Frank, he looked a little tired and sad. The tired part Frank understood all too well. Instead of a vacation, the past summer had turned into a whirlwind of peril as the case they were following grew larger and more frightening. At first, it had seemed like a routine job, breaking up a small-time luggage theft operation at Atlanta, Georgia's Hartsfield Airport, but the Hardys had stumbled across a higher-stakes game involving the Network and the Assassins, a worldwide terrorist group. Frank and Joe had tangled with the Assassins before. Even so, they were unprepared for the sheer horror of the plot they uncovered after a wild chase halfway around the world. The Assassins had planned to detonate a hydrogen bomb inside an Indonesian volcano. The explosion would have triggered earthquakes and tidal waves, the terrorists knew, and literally would have changed the face of the world. The Hardys had managed to defeat the Assassins and had helped capture one of the terrorist survivors, a brutal thug codenamed Boris. He'd been identified as an American named Thad Brubaker and now faced a variety of murder and conspiracy charges. Joe was assisting the prosecution with all his might. He had a personal reason. First, he had had the shock of discovering that a new friend, Gina Abend, was an assassin. Then he had seen Boris kill her. Had he really gotten over it? Frank wondered.
The trial is scheduled for next week, so clear your calendars,
the Gray Man told them.
So long as it's not tonight, Joe replied. Frank and I have a date with two blondes in a boat.
Have a good time,
the government man said, chuckling.
And don't let the goblins get you.
I'm so scared,
Joe said to his brother as they hung up.
We'll be partying in a haunted house, and I'll just be a nervous wreck.
Yeah, me too,
Frank said, laughing at his brother's mocking tone. He looked at his watch.
Come on, if we're going to get scared out of our wits, we have to start getting ready.
At 3 o'clock that afternoon, the Hardys were walking down Dock Street toward the Bearport boat basin with Callie Shaw, Frank's girlfriend. They had parked their van nearby. All three were carrying supermarket bags filled with potato chips, pretzels, dip, and other snacks for the party.
I hope you've got a good ghost story or two ready,
Callie told Joe.
Oh, don't tell me we're going to do all that hokey stuff,
the younger Hardy brother rolled his blue eyes.
Boring,
he drawled.
It's traditional Halloween entertainment,
Frank said, annoyed. The breeze off Barmet Bay ruffled Frank's dark hair, and he pushed it back with one hand.
Look around you,
Callie said.
Ghouls and ghosts are the way to go.
All the store windows around them were set with the usual symbols of Halloween. Indian corn and haystacks with goblins peeking from behind, Frankenstein monsters looming over several displays, vampires showing their fangs. Several stores were even decorated with spray-on cobwebs. And of course, all the candy stores were doing a booming business in trick-or-treating supplies. Already, children in colorful costumes were running up and down the streets, giggling and shrieking. One little boy in a hooded costume came rushing up. Joe tried to dodge, only to have the trick-or-treater cannon into him.
"But watch out where you're going, kid,"
Joe said, laughing, as the costumed child rebounded into Frank's path, nearly tripping him. Joe shrugged his broad shoulders.
"Oh boy, the wonders of Halloween. By the time that kid gets over his candy rush, they'll be redoing all the stores for Thanksgiving. Then I suppose you'll want me to walk around with a musket and a stupid pilgrim's hat." "Well, what's wrong with the Halloween haunted house party?"
Frank wanted to know.
"It's just so old-fashioned,"
Joe finally said.
"Ghost stories don't seem so impressive to kids who can go to the multiplex and see Night of the Evil Blood Butcher Part 6.
He pointed to the downtown movie theater they were passing. On its marquee was an announcement for a Halloween film festival. The signs in the front display cases were all for horror films with high body counts.
"So you're saying that splatter films have spoiled Halloween?"
Frank asked.
"Well, they make the old story seem pretty tame in comparison,"
Joe said.
"I mean, I am personally threatening to throw up if I hear that one about the maniac with the hook again."
"So you'd rather curl up with the VCR and slip in some creep show than go out to a Halloween party?"
Callie laughed.
"I never would have believed it. Joe Hardy turning into a couch potato."
Frank was a little surprised, too.
"I don't get it,"
he said.
"You love action flicks, even though you've seen a lot more of the real thing than most people."
That was very true. Joe might be only 17 and Frank a year older, but they'd investigated more mysteries and gotten dumped into more foreign intrigues than a lot of so-called professionals. Frank looked at Joe with concern. Maybe his younger brother was more tired than he had thought.
"There'll be fun enough,"
Frank said, trying to cheer his brother up.
"We'll have a nice sail across the bay this afternoon, then climb to the house on the cliff and frisbee and stuff until evening. And of course, the cookout."
"And finally, scary stories,"
Callie put in.
"Think about it. The old dark house, a crackling fire, and a cup of hot cider in your hand.
And your other arm around Vanessa Bender,"
Frank said, going for the clinching argument.
"She's never seen that old mansion, and no matter how much you make fun of ghost stories, they do make girls shiver and cuddle close."
Callie gave him a look.
"Or so you hope."
Joe smiled.
"Vanessa hasn't seen the old haunted house yet."
"You and Vanessa can explore it,"
Callie said to Joe.
"I'll make sure Frank doesn't tag along as a chaperone."
"It's a dangerous mission,"
Frank said, trying to look serious.
"But if you choose to accept it, I'll take some time alone with Vanessa,"
Joe said. Frank was glad that Joe was now looking a little livelier. Usually his blonde-haired, good-looking brother was the party animal of the Hardy team. Callie pulled Frank aside, pretending to show him a window display.
"It seems like Joe really likes Vanessa,"
she whispered. Vanessa Bender had enrolled at Bayport only recently, but Frank had noticed Joe's interest in the pretty new student with the ash blonde hair.
"Yes,"
Frank agreed.
"And I think it might be good for him. He's been a little too wild and crazy since..."
He thought for a second.
"Since Iola."
Iola Morton had been Joe's serious girlfriend, but she'd been killed by a terrorist bomb.
"You're right,"
Callie agreed.
"Vanessa could be really good for him."
She gave Frank a hug as they started to walk again.
"I know we're all gonna have a great time."
They caught up with Joe, so all that he heard were the last words.
"Yeah,"
he said.
"We will have a great time, and I'm looking forward to seeing Vanessa."
Dock Street ended at the gates of the Bayport Marina, where several pleasure boats were being prepared for the Halloween party. Many of the Hardys' friends were on the piers. Off to one side, Tony Perito was loading his speedboat, the Napoli. Frank noticed Chet Morden carrying a big box of food aboard. At least two other boats were being prepared, too. In the distance, at the last slip on the dock, was the good ship Vanessa. The Bender's cabin cruiser would be the biggest of the boats crossing the bay that afternoon. Miss Bender was an avid boater, as the Hardys had discovered. With the success of her animation studio, she'd splurged on a big boat. Joe had been really impressed to learn that Vanessa had almost been brought up piloting craft in the waters around New York City.
"Hey, Joe,"
Frank said.
"I think our captain is waving to you."
Sure enough, a blonde-haired figure stood beside the windshield of the cabin cruiser's small bridge. Although the Hardys were still far away, Vanessa gave them an eager wave. Then Vanessa brought her hand down to the control panel. A second later, they heard the deep chug of the cabin cruiser's engine. That throbbing note was suddenly drowned out by the roar of a horrifying explosion. Other vessels danced madly on a small, man-made tidal wave. The Vanessa and Vanessa Bender vanished in a white, hot ball of flame. End of chapter.